Now that's what I call a taco.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. Cyrus, it's still happening. I think now that I mentioned, okay, I know that I now know that it's as good as it gets. That's the movie quote. Now people are following up and texting me more things. What's as good as it gets?
You make me want to be a better man.
And all across Twitter land, they're letting me know. But I do appreciate it. People are really listening closely. Thank you for that. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Here's a note that came in a while ago. This is from Erica, listening in Hawaii. And she says, aloha, I remember you mentioning a site parents can go to in order to determine if a book is appropriate based on our faith values. She says, I want to look up some of these books for my 14-year-old son. Erica, I'm pretty sure that it's called pluggedin.com. And what I mean by that is I know that's what it's called, but I'm pretty sure that the site I recommended way back when or whenever you heard it is pluggedin.com. It's an affiliate or a subsidiary of Focus on the Family. And over the years, back in the days when we still had kids at home, we used it as a way to find out if they'd say, hey, we want to go see a movie. Okay, what's the movie? We'd plug it in and look at it. And in any number of cases was we would go through the description and we'd say, okay, well, it takes the Lord's name this many times. It takes his name in vain. It has these bad words this many times. It has this scene, has that scene. Because it will give you a breakdown of typically it's movies and video games. There may be some books in there. I don't know. I don't remember. But definitely movies and videos and video games. Pluggedin.com is the name of it. And so we benefited greatly from it. And there were any number of times where we would go through the contents of the movie with our kids and say, do you really want to go see this movie? And sheepishly, well, no, I guess I really don't want to go see this movie. And they wound up not seeing it. So that's the resource that we used. I haven't been on that website in a while. But, you know, when it comes to movie reviewers, even Catholic movie reviewers, it's hit and miss. And it's just sometimes, you know, they just don't have a good, you know, good discernment or whatever it may be. But I have found that even though this website is not Catholic, they seem to be on the money every time that I've checked in the past. So I would recommend that to you, Erica, pluggedin.com. I have no connection with them, by the way. Also, here's an email that comes in. This is coming in just this morning from Joan Marie. And Joan Marie finished her email by saying, I'll keep listening to the show, so I hope you're able to respond to this. Okay, well, here I am responding. She says, good morning. I've been a faithful listener to the Patrick Madrid Show since the days of Immaculate Heart Radio on 1000 AM in San Diego. And that was before the merger. She says, I love that call in the first hour of today's show, Taco Tuesday, March 14th. The caller, a former Catholic, went to confession with his friend and was asking you if that was appropriate. You encouraged him to keep listening to Relevant Radio and invited him to return to the church. Then you offered to send him a book that addressed some of his questions, but you did not say the title of the book. I have a few of your vast library of books, but would be most interested in getting the one you mentioned because I know someone who is in much the same position as that man. So could you please tell me the name of the book? Thank you. She says, God bless you. I pray for Relevant Radio staff every day, Joan Marie. Thank you, Joan Marie. Well, I must say, Joan Marie, at the very least, I will respond to your email with the title of the book, but I'm of a divided mind on whether or not I should say it publicly because I don't know. Cyrus, weigh in on this for me. I mean, I can say the name of the book, and I've said it before on the air. It's not as though there's some reason why I can't say it. But I wonder if there's some benefit for the sake of people who are listening and thinking, well, you know, I'd like to know more if there's just a standard book that I would recommend. Happens to be one that I edited. Or do you think there's some value, Cyrus, in not disclosing that publicly and just let the person who's going to get the book find out when he gets it? What do you think?
Oh, answer a question.
Well,
you make me want to be a better man.
I have that effect on you, Cyrus. I see that now.
What's the name of the book?
This is not as good as it gets. It gets better. It's getting better all the time. All right, Joan Marie, you're outing me. I was trying to be surreptitious about this, but the book that I would recommend for someone in that situation would be Surprised by Truth. It's the first volume in the series. You may already have it, published in 1994. And it's a collection of testimonies of people who discovered the Catholic Church that they never knew or that they hated. And they thought they knew the Catholic Church and opposed it and wound up becoming Catholic. So that's the book.
Well, now Todd's not going to be surprised.
Well, that was what I wanted to avoid. But
he's going to, if he's still listening, he's still going to be quite happy.
Goes nothing.
Yeah, it's a good thing you're doing.
I think so. Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. And thank you for the question that you sent in. Appreciate that as well. Let's go to Peter in Boston. Good morning, Peter.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. I had a question actually for my sister. Both of her son's godparents have basically left the church. My brother was a godfather, and he has passed away. Mm-hmm. And my sister-in-law has left the church. So she's wondering, she should be looking for different godparents or...
Yeah, well, I mean, this is after the fact, right? We're talking about people who were her godparents, but they've left the church?
Right.
Well, how old is your nephew?
Early 20s, 21, 22.
Okay, so he's an adult, right?
He is.
Okay. I mean, obviously he's an adult if he's in his 20s. What I mean is, does he act like an adult? Is he mature?
Oh, yeah, he's in his... third year in school, and he's a really good hockey player. He's got his stuff together, yeah.
That's good. Well, in actual fact, even though the godparents did not, they reneged on their commitment to helping him, and these things happen. I mean, I without going into any detail, there have been a couple godparents along the way in Nancy's and my experience where we asked them to be godparents for our kids and they flamed out. So it happens, you know, you can't predict the future, so you just work around it. He doesn't need to find other godparents. He doesn't need to go, it's not as though he has to have people functioning as godparents. It's a shame that these people flamed out. But he's now, and this is why I asked how old he was, because he's now reached the point where he's on his own two feet. And it would be nice if he had godparents who had an interest in his faith life, but he's old enough now where ultimately it's incumbent on him to choose for the Lord. And so he now has the wherewithal to do that. So he doesn't have to go get new godparents or anything like that. In fact, the people who flamed out, they still are his godparents. They're just derelict.
Well, there was my brother had died. You know, he passed away and he was a godfather. And the godmother, she left the church.
Yeah, it happens. Sorry to say. Mm. Now, here's the thing, Peter. You could be his honorary godfather. You know, you could undertake to fulfill the role that you're not officially designated as, but the Lord would smile on that, I'm sure. And you can do the things a good godfather would otherwise do. That would be cool.
Nice. Excellent.
And then maybe they'll start calling you the godfather and kiss your ring when they walk in the room and things like that.
Those characters probably would.
All right, Peter. I hope that helps.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Sam in Athens, Georgia. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a question since I've converted to Catholicism several years ago, thanks to your invitation. I was Baptist for over 60 years, and I'm in the process of moving back to my hometown, which is population 500 people. Mm. And people have already started inviting me to come to the church there.
To the Catholic Church or to which church?
To the Baptist Church.
Ah, I got it. Okay.
So what is a nice tactful way for me to approach an answer.
That's a great question. And I can imagine it would tug at your heartstrings because as a Baptist for so many years, you probably have a real soft spot in your heart and some good memories, I would think, right, from your time as a Baptist?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So I'm not in any way, Sam, trying to prime the pump so that you have mixed emotions or that you might be torn or think about going back to the Baptist church. I hope that that doesn't ever happen. But there's nothing wrong with your kind of letting them down gently by saying, you know what, I have a lot of great memories of my time as a Baptist, and I appreciate what I learned about the Lord and love for Scripture and all the things that went with it. But I found something more. I found in the Catholic Church Jesus in the Holy Eucharist. I found the communion of saints. I found the other sacraments. In other words, I found what Jesus wants all of us to have, the fullness of everything he came to give us. I have it now in its fullness in the Catholic Church. So thank you for the invite and asking me to go to the local Good Book Baptist, but I have something that makes me much happier and has much more, and I would respectfully encourage you to investigate what I have found and maybe come to Mass with me sometime and experience the Catholic Church in a way that you never thought you might before. Maybe you can be that conduit of these good people coming into the Catholic Church through you. Wouldn't that be interesting?
Yes, sir. Listen, I'm not going to say I'm a little hoarse today because the last time I said that, you said, well, something about being born in a stable.
I think I said you had a stable environment or you had a stable upbringing.
yeah. But, the nearest Catholic church in Thomasville, Georgia, is the one that I'll be attending. It's St. Augustine, and I know they listen to your show there.
Oh, well, shout out to all the parishioners at St. Augustine.
Yes, yeah, sir. So, okay. Wouldn't it be nice to say that everyone in Coolidge, Georgia, has converted to become a Catholic?
Well, I would be thrilled. And if we can get, maybe through your good auspices, Sam, if we can get a relevant radio station planted there in that part of Georgia, we'll do our best. And even in the meantime, before we get a station there, if you tell everybody you know about the Relevant Radio app, maybe we can get them listening that way. And we will do our part. We'll do the very best we can, Sam.
Yeah, sir. When I went out to Houston to the hospital a month ago, I told everybody to listen to 96.1 and 10:10 a.m. for the Relevant Radio.
That's great. That's really generous of you. Thank you for that, Sam. And don't forget, I mean, maybe you haven't forgotten, but we have materials for you at relevantradio.com. If you click under support, there's a whole section for parish ambassadors and materials that we can send you and bumper stickers and things like that to make your efforts easier to let people know about Relevant Radio in that new area.
Yeah, sir. Is there a Relevant Radio station in Tallahassee? That's the nearest large town.
I think there may be. We have a lot of radio stations in Florida. And the easiest way to find out, I don't have it in front of me, but if you go to relevantradio.com and then take a look, I'm going to open it up right here, I'll tell you. So go to relevantradio.com and under listen, you'll see where it says stations, and the stations will give you a map in every state in the country where we have either an affiliate. By the way, shout out to all of our affiliates. We love you. Or stations that we own and operate. You'll see them all there. And what am I seeing here? Yeah, go there, and you'll see everything that we've got. Thank you. Hang in there, Sam. Be right back.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
A happy Taco Tuesday to you, wherever you might be. And a birthday shout out, as requested by mom, to young Scarlett, who's 9 years old today. And her mom says that she enjoys listening to this program. So thank you, Mom, for letting us know about that. And happy birthday, Scarlett. I hope you're having a great Taco Tuesday today. 9 years old, that's great. I remember being 9 years old. I still remember being nine years old. It's a great age. I had a question that came in a minute ago, and I've never been asked this question before, so here it goes. This is from, I like this, it's intended to be from Anonymous, but it's spelled Unanimous. So this is from Unanimous, and Unanimous is listening in California, and this is the question: is bankruptcy a sin? I'm having trouble keeping up with bills and choosing to buy food other than paying bills. I tried getting loans, but nobody will work with me. Will filing bankruptcy be a sin? That is a fascinating question. And one thing to remember is that this, number one, it's legal. So it's a legal remedy that's available to some people in some circumstances. And it may be that you qualify to file for bankruptcy and discharge your debts. So let's distinguish between the legality of the thing and the morality of the thing. So I would be interested in reading what thinkers on such matters have had to say, and I haven't read anything about it, so I'm going to go cold in my answer here. But I can see where there's a moral dilemma here, because in justice, since you have racked up these debts through whatever, for whatever reason, I mean, maybe some of it or maybe all of it's not your fault. Maybe you lost a job, maybe you had a health crisis, or it could be something beyond your control that put you in this situation. But more often than not, it's somebody's bad decisions when it comes to how to handle credit and buying and living beyond their means, you know, spending more money than you're bringing in, not saving, things like that. So if it's whatever the combination is in your particular case, if you're at fault for the debt that you can't pay, there is a moral component here that bankruptcy, to my mind, could be problematic. And that is that, yes, you do have the legal remedy to do this, and so you wouldn't be breaking any laws or anything, and the law provides for it. But is it the right thing to do to leave somebody else holding the bag while you skate? And if you could discharge all of your debts, you still, in a moral sense, you have a debt injustice to repay these things. Now, I'm not saying that, because I don't really know, I'd like to think about this more, but I could see where there would be a moral qualm in filing for bankruptcy. And I'll say this much, I'll leave you with this thought. I've known a couple people who had everything lined up, legally speaking, to file bankruptcy and get out from under their mountain of debt. And in a couple of cases that I know personally, these people decided not to file bankruptcy, and they just got like second jobs or third jobs, and they sold their stuff, and they moved out of their house, they got a downsize, and they paid their debt off. It took them years to do it. And I'm talking here about two different situations, two different people with different situations. But over my lifetime, I've met a couple of people who decided, I just can't bring myself to file bankruptcy, because even though it's legal, I'm ripping off some people who in good faith loaned me money or sold me something. And I told them I'd pay them back, and I can't walk away from it. So they just did the hard thing, and they ground it out, and they paid for it. And I admired that. I really, really do admire that. So I offer that to you as you ponder this issue, Unanimous, and as you think what's the right thing to do in this situation. I wouldn't be at all surprised if that would factor in. So those are my thoughts, and I'd like to dig deeper into that topic. I'm glad you brought it up. 888-914-9149. How about Paul now in Chino, California? Hello, Paul.
Hey, good morning, Patrick. I just had a quick question for you. They're building a Coptic church in our neck of the woods here, and I was just wondering, is it okay for Catholics to attend there? I know in the past our parish has allowed Coptic nuns or sisters mm-hmm. to sell, you know, religious artifacts in our courtyard, and so I was just kind of curious, is there Mass valid for us as Catholics or no?
Are we talking about the Coptic Orthodox?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, it would be valid. There are some long-standing, age-old questions about Nestorianism, which we don't have to get into, but it's a heresy in the early church that some have said that the Coptic Orthodox fall prey to. But there are good relations, from what I understand, between the Catholic Church and the Coptic Orthodox. And the Catholic Church recognizes, as with the other Orthodox churches, that they do have valid holy orders and thus valid sacraments. And it's a shame that we live apart. But in the meantime, the Catholic Church does permit Catholics in a situation where you can't get to Mass. So let's say you're traveling in Egypt, for example, and you can't get to Mass because there's no Catholic Church nearby. You could fulfill your Sunday obligation by going to the Divine Liturgy at a Coptic Orthodox church. Now, as a matter of course, if there is your parish available, you really shouldn't be going to an Orthodox church for your Sunday obligation. You should go to the Catholic Church. And if you wanted to go to an Orthodox church just to see the Divine Liturgy or for a wedding, obviously, or a funeral, you can do that, certainly. You can go to the Coptic Orthodox Church and you can experience their Divine Liturgy and even receive the Holy Eucharist there if they'll permit you to do so. Not all Orthodox churches look very kindly on Catholics. But in any case, you could do that if you wanted to. But better that you go to your local parish, your Latin Rite Catholic parish, for your Sunday obligation.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You're most welcome. Thank you. Let's see. And Cyrus, I don't know if this is a joke. It probably is. I hope it is. This is from Mark, just came in. Mark's listening in Dallas, and he says the subject line, "This is true." Oh, by the way, his name he gives as Mark the Nastygram Master. So here's the message. I don't know if it's directed to me or you. It's probably me. He says, "Y'all are ugly and your mothers dress you funny. Thanks for the show."
Aww. We have the nicest listeners.
The nicest Nastygrams. We have the nicest Nastygrams here. We say that affectionately, of course. Here's one that just came in. This is from, let's see, this is going to be Ed, and he's listening in Corrales, New Mexico. He says, "I received from my doctor a prescription for some shampoo for the reason of treating hair loss. This shampoo is primarily used for dandruff, but it also reduces the DHT at the scalp, reducing the loss of hair. My question to you is, am I committing a mortal sin by running this through my insurance? I did not lie to my doctor what I wanted the prescription for, and my thought is my insurance is here to help me pay for my scripts, but I just have this tugging at my conscience that what I'm doing is wrong. I ask for your guidance." Well, that's an interesting question, and it shows, if nothing else, it shows, Ed, that your conscience is functioning well because you're listening to it and you're trying to determine if maybe you're coloring outside the lines here. So if I have it correct from you, this is a prescription shampoo, and it's for hair loss, but it also helps with dandruff. Now, I'm assuming that you want this prescription for the purposes of restoring hair. So my thought is, it doesn't seem to me like there's any deception or subterfuge going on here. If the insurance company says, we will pay for prescriptions, and it doesn't stipulate you have to have a certain intention in mind. It's just simply, if your doctor prescribes you some medication, we'll pay for it. And that's what's happening. He's prescribed you medication, and they're going to pay for it. So I don't see any conflict here, any moral issue. Certainly, it's not a mortal sin because you're not deceiving anybody not that I can see, and you're not doing anything that itself would be inherently wrong. They said, we'll pay for a prescription. You send your bill for the prescription. Their agreement is they'll pay for that. Now, they don't have a box that you have to check that says, what's your reason for wanting this prescription? Oh, you're going bald? Well, in that case, because you're getting something that's otherwise for shampoo or for dandruff, rather, but you really want it for hair loss. Nope, we won't cover that. I don't think it works that way. I think the insurance company doesn't care if you have a mixed motive. So based on what you're saying in the email, it doesn't sound like anything here is even a matter of sin at all, much less a mortal sin. But your conscience is working well. Congratulations on that. Let's go to Kate now in Clarkston, Michigan. Hi, Kate.
Hi. I'm a homeschooling mom with a bunch of boys, and okay. I don't dress them ugly. They accomplish that themselves. my question is...
Did you get that, everybody? Did you hear what Kate said? She doesn't dress them ugly. Her boys accomplish that for themselves. Zing.
I always like to check before, you know, when I come across something new I'm not sure about. Mm-hmm. And so I have two things I need to check. Years ago, we were listening to a priest that we trusted, and he explained to us when the priest holds up the gospel, it was correct, and in the old days they did it. They bowed. You bow to the word of God. So we adopted that habit, and we just thought, hey, you know, we should ask. The mm-hmm. other thing is my husband and I read the Magnificat every day, and today we came across, well, I did after he left, they had a little story and we did a reflections from a priest who said he invited, I'll read it word for word so I don't get it wrong. When I am the priest celebrant of a mass, I invite those assembled at the offertory to pray that, and in quotation marks, my sacrifice and yours may be acceptable to God the Almighty Father. What do you think when you hear my sacrifice and yours?
Kate, I'm having a hard time understanding you. It's kind of garbled. Could you speak really close to the phone, please?
Okay.
Okay, so that last part, okay, I heard the part that the priest says at Mass, and then what followed I didn't quite catch.
Okay. I invite those assembled at the offertory to pray that, and in quotation marks, my sacrifice and yours may be acceptable to God, the Almighty Father.
Okay.
And I'm not sure, you know, there was that whole scandal with the priest who said, let us all say, be baptized. So I didn't know if I should present this to them or not. Because it says, my sacrifice and yours.
Well, okay, so are you asking me about the wording of this prayer? Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay. Well, as long as he's reading what's in the sacramentary, that's fine. I would need to go to the sacramentary and look at the prayer and see, you know, if those words are there. I think they are. It sounds to me like what I hear at Mass every Sunday. So if the priest is reading what's there, there's no problem with that at all.
Okay, so it is the actual exact words. He wasn't adding yours.
Well, you know, I'd like to double check that, but it does sound correct as you're saying it. Does sound correct, but I would like to double check that. But I can show you how you can do that. It's very easy. Just go to the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference website. It's usccb.org. USCCB.org, and you want to look for, in the search bar, look for the Order of the Mass, Order of the Mass, and it will pull up, I think it's in a PDF form if I'm not mistaken, it'll pull up the Order for the Mass, and you can go through and look at each part of the Mass and what is required, what is in the liturgical books, what the priest can and can't do by way of modifying things. But based on what you're saying, it does sound accurate to me. So
we are with the priest offering, so it's all in order that way. So, okay, good, yes, I'll do that.
Okay, Kate,
great. Thank you
and salutations to those young men who are having difficulty learning how to dress properly. But I know you were only joking. Thanks a lot, Kate. Appreciate that. Let's go now to Dominic in the Twin Cities. Hello, Dominic. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Patrick. I recently got married. I'm a young adult in the Twin Cities, and me and my wife, we both started teaching religious education. I'm teaching eighth graders currently, and She's teaching ninth graders in both of our classes. They both expressed interest in learning about the Book of Revelation. And I'm just kind of wondering if you have kind of good approaches to teach this to middle school and high school kids.
Well, I'm a big fan in a big fan of the Baltimore Catechism, which is the St. Joseph edition specifically. I think that is really helpful in helping kids visually as well as through what's written understand these things. I talked about Symbolon, I don't know, maybe last week, which is a video-based tutorial in the faith. It's often used for RCIA programs. For the rite of Christian initiation of adults, people who want to be Catholic and they want to learn about the Catholic Church, so that can be very effective. If you're looking for something a little broader, I mean, Father Mike Schmitz, he does a really good job of in his teaching videos that are available on YouTube. Those are, I think, very effective with young people. If you want discrete theological themes, I really like the work that's being done by the Thomistic Institute in their Aquinas 101 videos. Those are very helpful as well. Relevant Radio, of course. Maybe if you can get the kids to start listening to Relevant Radio, maybe for an assignment each week. Every week, I need you to listen to 20 minutes of Relevant Radio and then report back, write a little report on what you heard on Relevant Radio. That could be a good thing, and it might get them hooked on listening, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's very helpful, Patrick.
Okay. Well, good. I mean, as I'm sort of thinking, I'm running my fingers mentally through my mental Rolodex of resources. Those are things that you could do right away. And I think any or all of them, especially the Relevant Radio part, would be good for the kiddos.
Yeah. I like to do lots of Bible studies in class, and I just feel like it'd be very difficult to do one with just, if, you know, a lot of them aren't used to the Bible, and it could be very challenging to kind of understand what's going on to teach them that stuff. So that's helpful.
And I know, Dominic, by the way, I can hear the keys clicking and the fingers tapping on their on the phones. A deluge of people are immediately going to start sending me messages saying, Father Mike Schmitz has a year of the Bible. You can go through the year every day by listening to these, and I've recommended that before. So just to save people the trouble from writing me emails, that's another resource, and he breaks it down day to day. So I hope that helps, Dominic. Thanks for that. Let's take a break, and we'll come back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this. If you're in the market for health insurance, our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is here to help you and your family find the most cost-effective plan. Learn more at relevantradio.com/forester.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
I looked it up. I went to the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops website, usccb.org. So in answer to the question that the lady was asking earlier about the words that the priest says at the end of the preparation of the offerings, so this is the bread and the wine that will be used in the consecration at Mass, here is what the priest is supposed to say. Pray, brothers and sisters, that my sacrifice and yours may be acceptable to God, the Almighty Father. So that is the prescribed language. And I thought it was, and I said I wanted to just double check it because, you know, every so often you might think that sounds right, and then you find out it's slightly different. So I did check it, and that's what it's supposed to say. So if that caller is still listening, what you heard is what the church says the priest should say. Thank you. Let's go to Mike in Coon Rapids, Minnesota. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Patrick. My question is regarding two aspects. One of them is dealing with the sin of drunkenness, and another one is dealing with sacrament of the sick. I have a brother that has been a chronic alcoholic for over 20-some years. He still claims to, says he practices the faith. I visited him yesterday and still drinking. And my question is with my brother is, although he can't control this drinking, it's like a demon, And I'm just thinking that I'm just concerned about his soul, and how the church would view this with this condition. And also it occurred to me, it says, here's somebody that truly is sick, and the sacrament is sick, but I'm not sure how this would work in his case. So that's my question.
Okay. Is he, let's talk about this for a minute, and I'll come back to the issue of his addiction. Is his health ravaged by this? Does he have cirrhosis of the liver, for example? Does he have liver cancer? Is he near death because of the drinking?
I suspect he has cirrhosis of the liver. He is being treated at the VA hospital, but he's
how old is he?
Like I said, been in treatment in his 50s.
Okay, so he's prematurely losing his health because of the drinking.
Yes.
We don't know what stage it's at, but it's not good, right?
No.
Okay.
Right. Not good.
Yeah. Well, this is a judgment call, but I think if I were the priest, I would if I'm going to make a mistake, let's make a mistake on the side of granting him this sacrament, because the church says that when due to danger of death from old age or illness, you've reached the point where it's appropriate to receive this sacrament. And so it sounds to me, even though he's not in old age, the effects of his drinking have caused so much harm to his body that he may well be in danger of death, maybe not imminently, but he could be in danger of death. So it's reasonable to say, I think, that the time has come for him to receive the sacrament, and
right,
and hope and pray that that has some, you know, positive effect on his physical health as much as it will on his spiritual health. So let's talk for a minute about the issue of his being in the grip of this addiction. The church talks a lot about conscience and the formation of conscience in the catechism. And if you're interested in kind of reading the section on that, you could start reading in, let's see, let me go to the top here. You want to start reading in paragraph 1776. And just read through all the way to 1802, and it lays out all the components of conscience. Okay, so here's why I'm bringing this up here, because in paragraph 1791, let's start with 1790. A human being must always obey the certain judgment of his conscience. If he were to deliberately act against it, he would condemn himself. Yet it can happen that moral conscience remains in ignorance and makes erroneous judgments about acts to be performed or already committed. This ignorance can often be imputed to personal responsibility. This is the case when a man takes a little trouble to find out what is true and good, or, now here's the key part to what you're describing, or when conscience is by degrees almost blinded through the habit of committing sin. In such cases, the person is culpable for the evil he commits. Now, this is an important topic because some people, and I've met them and I've talked to them, they will say, well, if you have a habit, whatever the habit is, fill in the blank, masturbation, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, whatever, you're not really guilty of a mortal sin, they'll say, if you are in the grip of this habit and you can't not do it, they'll say. And that's not true. And I don't know to what extent your brother struggles against this sin, but the catechism here points out that even if by virtue, well, that's a play on words, by dint of having become so addicted to a sin that in that moment you feel this compulsion and you do it not because you're pondering, should I do this or not do it? You just do it because you're so steeped in this habit. What the catechism is saying is you still are culpable for this sin, even if it is now rendered extremely difficult because of a habit, because you're guilty for allowing the habit to begin in the first place. Now that, of course, prescinds from, well, what if somebody spiked your drink with, you know, an opioid and you didn't intend to do it? Well, that's a different story. We're talking about somebody who does this on purpose. So that's the reason I'm bringing this up, is because let's say his situation is so dire and he, like you said, he's just drinking and he's not in control of what's going on, he all the more needs the sacraments so that he can deal with these effects of the sin on his soul, in addition to trying to get squared away physically, physiologically. So if he's at least desiring to be in the state of grace, and he wants to be right with God, and God knows what a terrible grip this vice, this addiction has on him, he's properly disposed to receive that sacrament. He's properly disposed to receive the sacrament of the anointing of the sick, and his sins will be forgiven. He should also stay close to Jesus in the other sacraments. But it will require him at least wanting to, a desire to stop sinning, even if he lacks pretty much all self-control. If he's asking the Lord to help him, the Lord will help him. And that's the state of mind or the state of his conscience that he should be in. Do you see why I'm bringing up that paragraph? Because of the habit issue?
Oh, yeah. Yep. I certainly do. That was always concerned about. Thank you.
You're welcome, Mike. And for what it's worth, before you go, I'll just mention to you the story of a guy by the name of Mark G. Tianjiang, and I'm sure I'm butchering the pronunciation of it. He was a Chinese saint, canonized saint. He died as a martyr in the Boxer Rebellion, so he died in 1900 in China. But his story is amazing because he was an opium addict. He was a devout Catholic, but he had a thing for opium, and he couldn't shake it. And for 40-some-odd years, he would go to Mass, he would pray, and he would go to confession, but it got to the point where priests would just deny him absolution because they kept hearing the same sin over and over again. And so for the last 30 years of his life, he never received sacramental absolution because the priests, I think they were being too rigorous here, but they just refused to absolve his sin because they didn't think he was really serious about being sorry for it because he was in such an addiction. And Mark Zhi Tianjiang, he persevered, and he lived without that sacrament, not because he didn't want to, but because they wouldn't let him. And he's now a canonized saint, and he had the wherewithal to die as a martyr for Jesus. So perhaps you can introduce your brother to him and ask him to intercede for your brother and pray to him and ask his intercession. That's what I would do. Thanks, Mike. Let's go to Oscar now in Harlingen. Is it Harlingen or Harlingen, Texas, Oscar?
Harlingen.
Harlingen. Got it. Okay.
My question is, in Leviticus, I read that you're not supposed to tattoo your body, but everywhere you look, you see a bunch of people with tattoos.
This is true. This is true. I am myself, you know, if somebody asks for my advice about tattoos, I will tell them I don't recommend it. It is true that in that passage in Leviticus, not only does it say don't get tattoos on your body, but in the same passage, it also says don't trim your hair on the sides of your head. And so one of the issues here is that if you invoke this passage, what you will find is somebody will say, well, what about these other things that the church says there is no sin involved? You can do this. You can trim the sides of your hair for men, etc. And that's why quoting the passage in Leviticus is not always going to be as helpful if somebody knows a little bit more about that, because they would say, well, that was just a moray that was people in those days were bound to, but we're no longer bound by that. And that's, you know, that's not necessarily a good answer or a good argument rather, but it's a way that some people might dismiss that. So I think that the passages in the Bible that are maybe more to the point would be like 1 Corinthians chapter 6, beginning in verse 9, do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, which you have from God? I think that's a powerful reflection point. Or 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 25, or verse 23 rather, may the God of peace himself sanctify you wholly, wholly, and may your spirit and soul and body be kept sound and blameless at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. That's another passage that I think plays into it. Also, 2 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 1, since we have these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from every defilement of body and spirit and make holiness perfect in the fear of God. Those are three passages that I think may have more of an effect on somebody who's considering whether or not to get body modifications and to think about how, you know, the body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. And the church doesn't say that getting a tattoo per se is sinful, but the church says it could be sinful. And one of the reasons that it could, and often I think often is sinful, is if it's being done for vanity, which is a species of pride. Pride is the chief of the seven deadly sins. In fact, all the deadly sins in one way or another are tied into pride. So if somebody's getting a tattoo so that he or she can be ogled and admired and look cool to other people, there's obviously there's the danger of the sin of vanity. And that's where the person's conscience has to kick in and determine, am I doing this for a righteous reason? Some people say, I get tattoos to glorify God because I have a tattoo of Jesus on my arm or my hand or something. Okay, that could be different. But if people are just doing it out of vanity, I think that would be a mistake, personally.
Yes, but those Christ tattoos are far and few between, and all everything else I see is nothing but trash.
Yeah, I'm not agreeing with people who tattoo their bodies with profane things. Far from it. I've heard from a couple of, well, one in particular, but a couple of Catholic exorcist priests who posit their opinion that can be a sign of demonic disorder in that person. Not to say that everybody who gets a tattoo, they're not saying that. I'm certainly not saying that. But for some people and what they put on their bodies, the messages, the images and things like that, that can be an outward sign of an inward diabolical disorder. Doesn't mean that they're possessed by the devil, but it means that their choices could be heavily influenced in that regard. There is an article, if you're interested, Oscar, it's an article called Tattoo You, Physical Graffiti, A Catholic Perspective on Body Art by a Catholic deacon in the diocese or the Archdiocese of Portland. And we'll get a link to that article for you if you would like to read it. He reflects on these Bible passages and others. So if you want to share that with someone in your life, that would be cool. Thank you. Seth in Alpena, Michigan, we probably don't have a lot of time, but what I have is yours. Welcome.
Hi. I have a question about Pope John Paul's Way of the Cross. I have a great fondness for the scriptural Way of the Cross, but in my Enchiridion of Indulgences, it says that to satisfy the conditions, not only do you have to move 14 times reflecting on his passion each time, in the parentheses, it says that you need to... It needs to go from the Praetorium to Calvary, and so I just was wondering,
what page are you on? I have my Enchiridion in front of me as well. Which page are you looking at?
I think it's 63.
Okay, let me take a quick peek here. I hope we don't run out of time. Let's see.
I'm sorry.
So, no, don't be sorry. I just wish we had. Okay, so we're looking at a different edition because 63 doesn't deal with that. So, are you asking? Do you have to use the prescribed Stations of the Cross in order for it to be to gain an indulgence?
To satisfy the indulgence, yeah.
Yeah. I think as long as you're using a Stations of the Cross that the church prescribes, I think that would satisfy it in and of itself, even if it might be different from a different version. Boy, I wish we had more time. Well, thank you, Seth. Until tomorrow, please pray for me. I'll pray for you. God bless you.